go to the fan hotline. Welcome in our pal Shelby Cassesi from WPXI, half of the incomparable duo that was You Like That Horse at one time and still really is the dynasty of fantasy football teams here at Odyssey Pittsburgh. Shelby now with PXI and doing a great job there. Hello, Shelby. How are you? How is the drive home from Latrobe going?
Hello, Horace. I'm doing well, actually, on the turnpike as we speak, heading home. So far, so good.
Are you able to get out in front of the Doppler on your way home tonight?
Let me tell you, the Doppler cleared out pretty quickly. It just so happened that whatever storm blew through just came over Latrobe at the exact wrong moment, at the worst possible time, and then everyone had to clear out. They moved practice into the gym. It was more of a glorified walkthrough today more than anything. So fans, players alike, going to have to wait another day to put the pads on.
This will be I think certainly one used in the anti-Latrobe camp because it didn't rain at all here in Pittsburgh, and it absolutely downpoured in Latrobe at Steelers camp. Shelby, seriously though, what did Mike Tomlin have to say about the interruptions? This is not the first practice this year that has been disrupted by this. Obviously, they do have the synthetic turf field that they can use at times, but you're also fully at the whim of Mother Nature, and I would think that practicing inside of a smaller college's gymnasium is not quite the same as being on four football fields outside.
Yeah, not ideal. And Mike Tomlin was asked about this when we talked to him after practice today. He was asked both about moving practice to the turf. He said that's really not how they wanted to start out the first day of pad, so they got some work done in the modified walkthrough in the gym. But if you recall, last year, Mike Tomlin actually moved practice to the mornings. And how it's kind of structured right now is there's a walkthrough in the morning, they have lunch, and then they go out to practice around 2 o'clock. But last year, they decided to move the actual practice to earlier in the morning. And at the time, Mike Tomlin had said they had too many heat-related health issues, and they just wanted to make things a bit easier on guys' bodies. Well, this year, they moved practice back to that afternoon practice, and he was once again asked about that. And he said, well, it wasn't hot enough last year, so we're moving it back to the afternoon. But part of that is now dealing with that afternoon rain that kind of comes through. And so he was asked if that's a concern, that they've had so many practices interrupted so far. And of course, he's not going to paint with a broad brush, if you will, and wouldn't really relent on talking about moving practice in any other way. So it sounds like things are going to be what they are so far here.
Yeah, when the Doppler gives you red paint, you paint the barn red, so to say.
Yeah, paint the barn red, cut your eyelids off, all that good stuff.
I'm curious, Shelby, what have been your impressions so far of Aaron Rodgers? What have you seen from him on the field, the way that he interacts either with you guys in the media, the way that he interacts with his teammates? What's been your overall impression of Aaron Rodgers? Because, I don't know, it feels like it's a really big story. It's been portrayed as a really big story, but it also feels like it's maybe even a bigger story. There's even a bigger story out there, perhaps, because I feel like it's probably the most important part of their football team, and if they're going to be successful. How's it all look so far with Rodgers?
Sure. So I tried to go into this. I mean, I do this with any player that comes in with an open mind. You know a lot about a guy that's been in the league as long as he has and has been as polarizing of a figure as Aaron Rodgers has been. So I wasn't sure quite what to expect other than the things that I've seen in the national media that everyone else has seen. And so getting to know him a little bit more over the course of the week, it's been pretty evident to me how quickly he has been viewed as a leader by his teammates. I think if you talk to anyone on that offense throughout the course of the mandatory mini camp where he was there, and then especially this first week of camp, his receivers, the guys on the O-line, they're all very eager to talk about what kind of a leader he is. And then talking to him in media availability, hang on one second, I'm getting a phone call. I need to make sure I don't disconnect. Okay, anyways, we're back to it. Talking with him in media availability, he's had these, pretty gregarious meetings with reporters. He's been willing to joke. He's put a smile on. He hasn't taken things too seriously. And I think a really eye-opening moment for me was talking with him and DK Metcalf back-to-back, kind of that fun storyline about them being suite mates up at St. Vincent and kind of the relationship that they're building with each other. So that's sort of the personality aspect of it, is that he seems like, despite being this 41-year-old superstar who's played in the league for a million years, he's not withdrawing from his teammates. He's actively trying to be part of his team, which is encouraging. Now, the on-field stuff, I am someone that doesn't try to read a ton into the football and shorts aspect of training camp. But, I mean, I've seen what everyone else has seen, which is that it's been shaky. I mean, the very first snap of 11-on-11s, it's a pick to Patrick Queen when he's targeting DK Metcalf. He threw a pick to Jalen Ramsey, which was an extremely athletic play by Jalen Ramsey. So it's not been – he's not been fabulous in camp, but I'm not going to sit here and push the panic button because it's just too early for that. I think you have to let guys – work things out in training camp. You have to let them make mistakes before you start to panic a little bit. So I'm not going to sit here and say he's been great, but I'm not willing to, you know, like I said, push the panic button yet.
Talking with Shelby Cassese from WPXI. Shelby, they have not made that move yet for a second wide receiver. Is that still an indication? Is it an indication that they feel like wide receiver two is on the roster right now, or do you feel like maybe they're just playing a bit of a waiting game? And has anybody kind of stepped up in that regard to take on that wide receiver two role?
If the Steelers added another receiver to move into that number two role, I would be stunned before the season starts, to be honest with you. It would surprise me greatly if they continue to make moves. I truly think they're done after a busy offseason making the splash moves. And people within the organization will swear up and down that they have a lot of faith in this receiver room. And I think it's fair to be critical and say, well, what has changed drastically with the receiver room from this year compared to last year? Yeah. And of course, DK Metcalf is an upgrade over George Pickens, but you still have a very similar supporting cast. Of course, they added Jonnu Smith as a tight end, as another pass catcher, but there are a lot of similarities there. But Omar Khan and Mike Tomlin in media availability, they will tell you time and time again how much faith they have in the receiving core behind DK Metcalf. There is actually, I think, a lot of faith riding on Roman Wilson this year. Omar Khan has mentioned him a couple of times. Mike Tomlin has mentioned him a couple of times. They feel he's really had a productive offseason. And even today, I think Mike Tomlin was asked more or less about Roman Wilson and him coming back from his injury. And he's Calvin Austin, who, if you remember, got hurt in his rookie training camp and didn't see the field the entire year and has built a nice career for himself. So they are really putting a lot of faith on Roman Wilson. I know it was a difficult year for him last year. They have an open mind. They have a lot of faith in him. So, you know, I even saw today that the Steelers, the odds makers have the Steelers as one of the top landing spots for a very unhappy Terry McLaurin, one of our yeah, with the Commanders. But that would truly stun me. I really think the Steelers are done adding in a big way. And the hope is that DK Metcalf is who he has shown he is. And some of these guys behind him, like Roman Wilson, step up in a big way. And that the tight ends are utilized more as a pass catcher and not just a tight end.
Broderick Jones, Shelby, I think probably not too many individual players. I mean, Aaron Rodgers certainly will, but not too many individual players will be as under the microscope as Broderick Jones. What are your thoughts on sort of where he stands right now? I know dealing with an injury, but also, you know, it's no secret there's been some not so flattering videos put on social media of Broderick Jones being made into a human turnstile a couple of times on the field at La Trobe. How concerning is it right now? And how concerned should Steeler fans be about the left tackle position and the guy that ultimately is, you know, kind of that biggest line of defense for the blind side of their 41-year-old quarterback?
And again, my training camp philosophy extends to Broderick Jones. Yeah, those videos were far from flattering, but I'm not going to jump to conclusions about a player at this phase if he is dealing with an injury at that time, which he is now. But Mike Tomlin did tell us today that he expects Broderick Jones to practice tomorrow. He expects he should be ready, which is a good sign. I'm not concerned too much yet about the videos, but I am concerned in the sense that this is the year for Broderick Jones. You know, you can make excuses for him the first couple of years. He was a rookie coming in. He was very green when they drafted him. There was a lot of room to grow. Year two, he's not playing on his natural side. He's slipping back and forth. The O-line was dealing with a lot of injury. But now is the time where he he has to kind of prove it, or you really encroach on that bust territory when you talk about a guy they traded up for to get in the first round. If he's still making the same mistakes, like the bad holding calls we saw that got him benched last year, if we see him being that turnstile that we've been seeing in these videos, then you're really encroaching on that bust territory, and there's really no excuse left. This left side's going to be his natural side. He's in his third season when these guys you're investing a lot in, like a trade up for a first round pick, really need to make their presence known. So while I'm not going to sit here and be overly concerned about the first 5 days of training camp, I do think he needs to be very reasonably on watch this season, because if he doesn't perform the way he's expected to, then you really start to think about finding a replacement and dealing with the fallout of having a bust first round pick that you traded up for.
Shelby, defensively, we've heard so much over the last couple of years about the word communication. I believe I saw a quote today about communication and how, you know, they feel like they're getting back on track after kind of falling apart in that regard. First of all, I don't understand how late in a season you're not communicating well after you've gone out there and had hundreds of snaps together, but that's neither here nor there. Do they feel like they have been able to solve the communication issues and that will not extend from the end of last year into the beginning of this year?
They do. And again, you can say a lot this time of year and feel confident in a lot. But Josh, I mean, it's such a good question about what you said. How do you deal with these communication issues so late in the year? And I cannot state enough, and everyone saw it with their own eyes, but I cannot state enough just how much that aspect of their game fell apart in those last five games of the season. And it was a question that we asked week in and week out. Why are you guys not communicating? What is going so wrong here that you aren't figuring this out this late in the year? And a lot of guys just didn't have the answers, or they didn't have an answer that they were willing to tell us on the record, you know? So I think when you look at the changes they've made, you know, it's been a long time since I have seen the Steelers heads and brass this excited about a group of defensive backs. It's just something that Mike Tomlin has talked about numerous times over this short span that we've been with him through training camp, talking about how he thinks the group of defensive backs they have can go man-to-man with any team in the NFL and any receiver in the NFL, and they can move around and they're all versatile. There is so much excitement for that group back there that I think that's one of the reasons why they feel that communication is going to be so drastically improved. You have Patrick Queen here, who's going to be, you know, has had a full year under his belt here in Pittsburgh. I think he has a lot more experience with communicating within this defense. And talking to some of these guys, the optimism is really high, and they seem to really think that the communication issues have been solved just based on some of the changes that have been made.
We'll see if it all plays out that way. Shelby, appreciate it, and let's do it again soon. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Horst.
All right, Horst, that's Shelby Cassese joining us on the road from Latrobe, Pennsylvania, on her way back from Steelers training camp. A lackluster day at Steelers training camp. I got to say this, too, about the communication thing. We've been hearing for years now the word communication issues, the words communication issues get thrown out there. At what point do you just stink at football? I mean, seriously, I do think that there comes a time where communication issues is just the go-to blame game for we're just not that good of a football team. You know, I don't think football teams are necessarily made or broken on communication alone. Like, it's important. But when you're in the last six games of the year, and yeah, like, I won't deny there were probably communication issues with that team. Were they to the length that they got carved up for 299 rushing yards in a playoff game by the Baltimore Ravens, and Derrick Henry looked like a literal horse galloping through the back of that the back end of that defense? No, I don't think that they were that bad from a communication standpoint. I just think they weren't a very motivated or good football team. Ultimately, that's what it comes down to. But for players, you see, it's easy to blame communication because, well, A, that's not calling out what they are most proud of, and that's their talent, their fitness level, etc. And B, when you say communication issues, it opens it up to that being, A, you're not pointing the finger, but at the same time, you are pointing the finger. And what I mean by that is when you say there's communication issues, ultimately somebody is going to say, well, who's the biggest culprit for the communication issues? Of course, we all know who that has become for last year, and that's Minkah Fitzpatrick. People have labeled Minkah Fitzpatrick as the communication problem on the back end of the Steelers' defense. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. You don't know. Nobody probably knows except for the people that are inside of those walls, because I don't think anybody will actually come out fully and say Minkah was screwing this all up for the rest of us. So in a sense, you are finger-pointing it away, but you're not finger-pointing it away because communication is a two-way street, so you're ultimately shouldering a little bit of the blame while not shouldering all of the blame. Nobody's coming out and saying, yeah, I was terrible. They're just saying we had communication issues. So not to deviate too much, but I just think sometimes when you hear, and I picked up on this being around the team, when it's like they go out and they look wholly unmotivated. They look like they don't care for half of the snaps. And we saw that, I think, down the stretch last year. I thought we saw a broken football team that had given up on trying or caring about that season. By the time that they got to that Baltimore playoff game, they were done. They were mentally done. They were physically done. They were done. And I heard communication this, communication that, but ultimately I think it was they didn't want to admit that they had quit. They didn't want to admit that they were physically and mentally broken down. So it's just, well, you know, we had a little communication issue here, a little communication there. Thanks to Shelby again for coming on. Appreciate her joining us. In support of the Pittsburgh for PPS Backpack Drive, you can bring brand new backpack. You can bring a brand new backpack to Donaldson's Crossroads inside the mini mall on Friday, August 1st from 1 to 2 o'clock. And stop to chat with Adam Crowley of the Fan Morning Show. Help us get students in the Pittsburgh Public Schools ready for the upcoming year. Details at 937thefan.com. There is a big, big, big question mark for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And we talked about it with Shelby. I think it's Broderick Jones. If you were to ask me what's the number one issue, and we'll open up the phone lines, 412-928-9370, what's the number one thing you're most concerned about for the Pittsburgh Steelers this year? I think it's natural to say, well, they don't have a wide receiver too. Well, you got a 41-year-old quarterback. Like, those are issues for sure. I think a lot of it centers around the left tackle. Offensive line, not a sexy position, but when you have a dog, you know what, left tackle playing out there, things can go very, very bad very, very quickly. And by bad, I mean you could see Mason Rudolph playing by the second week of the season if Broderick Jones doesn't learn how to stop becoming a human turnstile every single day at practice, because the videos that I have seen have not been kind to the former first-round pick. They got to get that figured out. We'll talk more about that on the other side as well. I want to hear from you as well. What are your biggest worries? What's your biggest worry? I'll tell you a couple more of mine, but I can tell you right now, Broderick Jones, I think, has to be worry number one. And in many ways, I feel like for Steeler fans, he might be becoming public enemy number one as well. He's becoming the whipping boy. And you hate to see it. But somebody was going to become that. Someone had to play that role, right? We always have that player here in Pittsburgh that the fans just turn on and they're against him. He's got to prove people wrong now. So we'll talk more about that when we come back. Curious to hear from you at 412-928-9370. Your biggest concern for this Steelers season, as they tried to practice today in pads for the first time. And Mother Nature said, nuh-uh, ain't going to happen. They'll re-rack it again, try it tomorrow. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. We'll take your calls next. I'm Josh Rountree. This is Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. You can visit them at southhillskia.net. Threw this out there, 412-928-9370, if you want to reach us. What is your number one concern for the Pittsburgh Steelers as they get set to enter the 2025 season? Where is it right now? I told you mine. I think it's Broderick Jones. Wide receiver two, the production there, it's an issue. Aaron Rodgers, a 41-year-old quarterback who not all that long ago, blew out his Achilles like 30 seconds into game number one. Is it the defense? Is it the communication issues that we discussed? Is it Mike Tomlin? Is it Arthur Smith? Let me know. 412-928-9370. Let's go to Donald in the car next on the Fan. Hi, Donald.
Hi. Yeah, I just had a comment on Broderick Jones, and I wanted to reference what you had said earlier about him becoming the whipping boy for the Steelers here, potentially going forward. And I think that's a real shame because, you know, I think that he is, if that happens, you know, he'll just be the latest instance casualty of the Steelers' inability to, or my perception that the Steelers have a problem with developing players, especially high round draft pick players. If I recall correctly, Broderick Jones was the starting left tackle on a national championship Georgia team.
Yeah.
And he comes in and, you know, I don't care how high you're drafted. You know, your rookie year in the NFL is absolutely, no matter how good you are, is in most instances a question mark. So I think that's a wash the first year. Last year was his second year. And what do the Steelers do? They start flipping him around to various positions on the line outside of his natural position. And now this year is being cast as his make or break year. You know, I think it's a real shame, and it goes to the heart of a big problem, as I see it, with the Steelers. And they can't develop players. It happened with Najee Harris, and Najee is gone now. You know, again, number one draft pick out of Alabama. I was praying, you know, I have one of my daughter just graduated from University of Alabama, and I was praying that the Steelers did not take Jalen Milroe because he has all the potential in the world, all the attributes, but he definitely needs to be developed. I was very afraid that they were going to take him and ruin him too. And, you know, I hope it doesn't happen to Broderick Jones, and I hope this that he, you know, turns it around this season. But that's all I wanted to say.
You mentioned, like, ruining Najee Harris. How would you say that they are responsible for Najee Harris? I'm just curious.
Well, I think they just didn't utilize him effectively. He was behind a terrible line. And all, you know, I just remember seeing play after play where they'd throw, you know, laterally.
Yeah.
And him being out there and expected to, you know, elude four or five defenders.
Yeah.
And gosh darn it, but the guy still, you know, I think he ran for 1,000 yards per season.
Yeah.
But I just don't think he was utilized correctly.
I think, I'm in agreement with you on that, Donald, and thanks for the call. I think when we look back at the misusage of players, it's been there. I mean, look, you can make the case that Minkah Fitzpatrick was being misused, right? I mean, that's been tossed out there a ton. That Minkah playing 38 yards off the line of scrimmage does not put him in the best possible scenario in order to thrive. That he's not able to make plays on the ball when he's just, you know, not involved in plays down the field. Like, it's, I get why people say that. Najee, I understand that as well. I've talked about this on past shows. I remember Najee's rookie season, him going up over a DB and picking the football off his helmet on like a go route down the sideline, like a corner. He just went up and took the football away. And in that first year for Najee Harris, like, we saw them throw the ball to him quite a bit. Ben Roethlisberger was the quarterback, and I think a lot of that was, you know, old cowboy check down, dishing it off to Najee Harris, but we saw him involved in the passing game at least a respectable amount. Maybe even more than respectable. He had 94 targets as a rookie and caught 74 passes. Now, he didn't get a ton of yardage with those, 467 yards, but I don't know. At the same time, the guy's long run in his career is 37 yards. So I think he was a fine running back. I don't think he was worth the first round pick that they put on him. I didn't think at the time that they should be using a first round pick on a running back. And as time has shown, first round picks on running backs, unless you're getting the truly, truly elites, the Saquon Barkleys of the world, probably not going to be all that worthwhile at the end of the day. I mean, the guy that a lot of people thought was better than Najee Harris, who I would include myself in that, in Jaylen Warren, he wasn't a first-round pick. He wasn't even a pick. He was an undrafted free agent. So, misusage is definitely one thing. And when we talk about Broderick Jones, he's right. Guy that comes out of college as a left tackle, you're like, all right, we're going to have a left tackle now. And then all of a sudden, you know, he's sitting behind Dan Moore because Dan Moore, you know, refuses to play the other side. Dan Moore just can't possibly wrap his head around playing right tackle. So the guy that he's a number one pick on suddenly is being cast behind a guy that is, you know, I know Dan Moore got paid, but at the time, Dan Moore was just kind of an average player. And the left tackle of your future did not get to play left tackle. So they put him on the right side. He wasn't very good on the right side. And now he's got to go back to the left side. And he's got to protect a 41-year-old quarterback who, I'm sorry, at 41, you're just not that mobile anymore. And when Broderick Jones makes mistakes, the Steelers are going to pay in a major, major way for those mistakes. And he's going to make mistakes because I just don't think he's that secure as a player yet. But in year three, you should be. And I'm not saying this is all on Broderick Jones. Like, I think the Steelers are to blame for this as well. But at the end of the day, we're talking about players here, and it's all-encompassing. And to this point, Broderick Jones, I think, has been a relative disappointment. You also hear from him, he gets asked about moving back to left tackle, and he just, you know, when he was asked about it earlier, I think it was later last week, he just sounded so, I don't know, like almost defeated so very early. In fact, Joel, if you could get my computer on here, this was Broderick Jones last week.
It's okay, you know. Just getting back started with things, but I feel all right for the most part.
And that doesn't sound like a guy that's exuding confidence right now, does it? It sounds like a guy who just had a terrible day at work, and you're like, hey, hon, how was your day? And your wife's, you know, come home, your wife, how was your day? It's okay. It's been okay.
If this was Broderick Jones moving to right tackle, maybe this makes a little bit of sense, but...
Yeah, because he's moving away from what's comfortable for him. So that's concerning for sure. Let's go to Dwayne and Sarver next on the Fan. Hi, Dwayne.
Hi.
What's going on?
Can I talk about the Pirates?
Yeah, what's up?
Can we talk about the trade deadline?
Yeah, what do you want to say?
Well, I don't think we should trade. I think we should trade forever to get a bat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for the call, Dwayne. Appreciate it. You know, I think we talked about this in the last hour. They need more than a bat, right? They need multiple bats. There are holes to fill in this lineup, not a hole to fill. So I don't know. I don't know if that means you have to trade Mitch Keller if you're going to try to get multiple bats. I don't like that plan of attack either. I mean, ideally, I'd just like you to go in the offseason and go out and pay some people, but apparently that's an option that's off the table. 412-928-9370. I threw out the question regarding the Steelers. What is your biggest area of concern? Fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. You can visit them at southhillskia.net. I guess the issue for me with the offensive line and with Broderick Jones goes beyond just Broderick Jones. I don't think we should dismiss the fact that Troy Fatano has never played in an NFL football game before, outside of a preseason game, in which, if you recall, he looks really bad. Remember? First preseason game last year, Troy Fatano did not look good, and then he got hurt. And he missed the entire year. And I don't know. I think it's a little bit silly to just sit here and automatically assume that Broderick Jones goes back to his normal position. You got Troy Fatanu healthy now, and he can play right tackle. And everything's going to fall into place perfectly. I think it's far more likely that the offensive line isn't going to be good because one or more of those elements of the equation are not going to be good. Like, just because Broderick Jones goes from right tackle to left tackle doesn't mean that Broderick Jones is a good left tackle in the NFL. Why would we think that? The assumption is, well, he was a good left tackle at Georgia. Okay, Jarvis Jones was a good outside linebacker at Georgia. Was Jarvis Jones a good outside linebacker in the NFL? I rest my case. I don't think it's fair for us to think that Troy Fatanu is going to go to right tackle and suddenly be a good NFL player. Guys get drafted all the time, and this guy's coming off a relatively serious injury that cost him an entire season. How do we know that he's going to step in and be able to perform at a high level as the right tackle? In your two tackle spots, you have significant question marks around. And I threw the question out there, and if you still want to call in 412-928-9370, I threw the question out there about what your biggest concern is. And I said Broderick Jones, but I think it's bigger than that. It's this offensive line. Look, Zach Frazier was good last year as a rookie, but you have a guy with a soft tissue injury of some sort, and Isaac Seumalo, who started the year unable to perform in practice. A guy to his right side in Mason McCormick, who, while serviceable, had a PFF grade of 57.7. And it's not like the eye test was any better. The results were not any better. Did they run the ball particularly well last year? No. They said that they wanted to be a team that wanted to run the ball well. I forget who it was last year, but somebody had a great quote. It was a national TV show or something, you know, football show. And they made the comment, like, the Steelers pound their chest about being this great defensive and running-based team, but they're not particularly good at either one of those things. And that played out down the stretch. Like, they weren't good. So I'm not knocking Mason McCormick because he's a young guy and there's time to grow and build and learn and all that. But why do we sit here with the assumption that they're going to be a good offensive line because they've just made a couple of changes? One of those changes being a guy that played last year below average play at right tackle, now going to a more important position. And yes, it is his more natural position, but it's far more important. And if he makes the mistakes that he made last year at right tackle, now at left tackle, they're not going to have Aaron Rodgers make the bye week, let alone the end of the season. 41-year-olds don't last behind bad offensive line play. You add Seumalo and his issues. You add McCormick being a young guy that, you know, really did not grade out all that well. And Frazier in the middle, who was, I think, good. But that's far from enough. So that's my biggest question with the Steelers. I mean, for goodness sakes, this team had Darnell Washington line up as a left tackle at a walkthrough today. I forgot to mention that. They did a walkthrough today. Mike DeFabo put this out. And I think I'll include the whole context of what Mike wrote because I don't want it to seem like I'm not properly quoting Mike on this. But Mike DeFabo from The Athletic tweeted this out. He said, during walkthrough, the Steelers showed a tackle over formation with both right tackle Troy Fatanu and backup tackle Calvin Anderson on the right. On the left, Darnell Washington was next to the guard. From left to right, it was Darnell Washington, a tight end, playing left tackle. I think you can make the case that if Darnell Washington gained about 30 pounds, he could actually be a pretty good left tackle. But Darnell Washington, maybe that's going to happen. Darnell Washington at left tackle, Spencer Anderson at left guard. Then you had Zach Frazier, Mason McCormick at center and right guard, Troy Fatanu at right tackle, and Calvin Anderson at right tackle. Now, Mike goes on to say the advantages of this formation, you create an extra gap on the front side With a three-man surface, you disguise where eligible receivers are aligned, which is especially a problem versus man. Good in short yardage situations, which I agree with that for sure. And you can trick the defense by rushing to the line. He went on to say, this is not a they're moving Darnell to tackle thing. It's a scheme thing for the reasons I listed above, but obviously it helps when you've got a big physical tight end on the backside. I'm not knocking them for trying this. I'm just saying, like, they're out there running Darnell Washington at left tackle. It sounds like they're going to get Broderick Jones and whatever soft tissue injury he's been going through, they're going to get him back. But my goodness, we got to pump the brakes with this being a good offensive line. I think a lot of blame got assigned unnecessarily, perhaps, to Najee Harris. And Najee was not without his issues. He just didn't have the burst, I think, to be a really successful NFL running back. But running backs are only as good as their offensive line. The Steelers did not have a good offensive line last year. And I am not exactly willing to come out and say that they have a good offensive line or anything, or even average offensive line this year. I have to truly see it play out. And today, it, you know, didn't get a chance to play out in pads. Fan hotline, you heard Shelby Cassessi on that. That's presented by Sullivan Super Service, providing trusted plumbing and HVAC service for over 50 years. Up next, we're going to get back into a little Bucco baseball talk. By the way, before we do that, did you see the news out of Baltimore today?
That they traded Sir Anthony Dominguez to Toronto?
That's not the that's not the news I was talking about. This is football related. Isaiah Likely, down and injured. Obviously, Likely is a guy, I mean, they really, with Mark Andrews, they've been able to get that 1-2 tight end punch flow, and I think maybe in a way that the Steelers have thought about as well. You go back how successful the Patriots were with it, with Gronk and Aaron Hernandez. Things maybe didn't go great for Aaron Hernandez ultimately, but Isaiah Likely rolled his ankle, expected to miss a few weeks, according to John Harbaugh. That seems like a really serious timeline with a mild description of the injury. He rolled his ankle and he's going to be out a few weeks? Sounds like it could have been worse. He's going to get an MRI tomorrow, so they'll have more info then. But he was carted off after an ankle injury and he's going to be out a few weeks. When do the Steelers play the Ravens? That's not so late in the season, right? Like, really late. I think they play the Ravens like at the very end of the year. I don't have the schedule memorized yet. I'm sure Pony does. Yeah, week 14 is their first game against Baltimore. And then they play them week 18. I knew they had played them twice at the end. So I would assume at that point Likely is back. But hey, if that guy has to miss a few games, that's a big blow to that offense. He's a good player.
Well, and I'm also going to mention, did you see that Martin Emerson for Cleveland has an Achilles injury. So while he's not one of the, you know, like Denzel Ward is the main corner on that team, but yeah, if those cats lost Martin Emerson for the year, if that's indeed a torn Achilles, which it could be, he's getting an MRI, that's a big blow for those guys.
Yeah, and Mike Garofolo reporting that it's an Achilles tear. So it seems like it's a matter of time right now before a guy drops, right, in practice. For the most part, the Steelers have had a couple little bumps and bruises, but they've been able to stay, you know, relatively upright, if you will. But you just hope that they're able to stay away from that. You can listen to the Fan Evening Show on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I say they just let Darnell Washington play left tackle. Just beef him up, see what happens. You already got two tight ends. You got Jonnu Smith and Pat Freiermuth. How much time is Darnell Washington going to get on the field? I heard he made a great catch in practice the other day in 7 shots for a touchdown, but I don't know. Maybe you beef him up and you give him the option of doing the old Brian O'Neill dance. Remember when Brian O'Neill for Pitt caught touchdown. I mean, you have that in your arsenal, I guess, if you ever need it, but maybe Darnell can be, maybe he can be that guy.
Tell you what, they got to take some plays from the Ben Johnson / Dan Campbell playbook, you know, where you've got a left tackle making plays and catching touchdowns like a tight end. The Steelers almost essentially have.
Do you think that Arthur Smith has the capability of being that creative?
Probably not.
Yeah.
But it's a thought.
Yeah. That sounds like something that Matt Canada would have tried and they would have messed it up so bad. It would have been a spectacular embarrassment. A fumble or something like that would have happened for sure. Joel, 8.5 is you're a gambling man, as they like to say. You kind of gave me a look there, like I shouldn't be talking about you gambling.
No, that's good.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
All right. I don't want to.
No,
if it's a sore subject, I don't have to bring it up.
No, nothing.
Okay. All right. 8.5.
I mean,
8.5 wins.
Mike Tomlin always finds a way, doesn't he?
Apparently, that is getting the over is getting absolutely hammered right now.
As it probably should, because Mike Tomlin just finds a way.
Never has a losing season.
Always finds a way to reach that number.
What if they go 8-8-1?
That would be a non-losing season. That would be a non-losing season.
Does that count as a push then? If they go 8-8-1, does the half? It has to be. It's just wins, right?
Have to win nine games if you take that over.
That would be a slap in the face if they tied a game and went 8-8-1.
And think about,
and you had the over at 8.5.
If, let's say,
I might pick them to go 8-8-1 this year.
Imagine that.
But bet them on the over. Because they don't have losing seasons. This does feel like a season that could blow up spectacularly, and they could maybe have that streak come to an end. But I don't know. I've thought that before with Steeler teams as well. And at the end of the year, they find a way to, you know, win 6 of 7 games to close out their season and find a way to keep the streak alive.
And Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback this team has had since Ben Roethlisberger.
Also the oldest that they've had. I think people fail to mention that. Chris Muller said earlier that if you could bet on some sort of a death match, that you might do it. Is that a fair analysis of your gambling activities? That if somebody presented you with the opportunity to bet on a death match, a fight to the death, a gladiator type of activity, let's say, that you would be interested in getting into the ring, so to say, and betting on that. Is that unfair of Mueller to say about you?
Oh, it's almost like he's calling me a degen.
The question is, are your morals telling you that you should not bet on a gladiator-esque type of deathmatch event?
It's something I really don't have a lot of knowledge about, so I would just stay away from it.
Well, at one point you didn't have knowledge about the things that you currently bet on now. You had to learn.
So then I would learn that stuff a little bit. I'd learn, you know.
Joel, you're allowed to say I would not bet on death matches. In fact,
I got better things to spend my money on.
From a life standpoint, I would probably recommend that you say, no, Chris, I would not bet on a death match, gladiator-esque battle.
I could spend my money in better wise.
Don't you wish, though, that you could like go back to medieval times and bet on jousting?
Oh, wouldn't that be something?
That would be great. The money had to be. I was at the U.S. Open this year, and
props.
You're by the folks with the really nice seats, and you hear them going back and forth like, all right, Rory's going to be closest to the pin here, and they're like, $20 says this, $100 says that, and they're just like throwing money back and forth. Imagine being in like Middle Ages, and you get to bet on jousting.
That's something else.
Yeah, that would be cool.